Hi, Todd Feinberg, After Six. Today we're talking with Mark Fitch, Yankee Institute. Visit yankeeinstitute.org. They are a think tank. They research politics. What is your mission, Mark?
My mission is to keep the government on the straight and narrow as best I can and try to make sure that, you know, there's fairness for taxpayers as well.
All right, I hate to tell you, but you're a failure thus far.
Well, you know, I only started a few years ago, so I'm a little behind the eight ball. So
I know you've got a long history of all that misbehavior to clear up. So I wanted to tell you something before we get into tolls and other things that are happening in Hartford. And it's that as I watch these hearings on CTN, I'm struck by the habit of comedy that exists in these chambers, which everybody's heard about, but I think a lot of people don't know what it is. But when you watch legislators relating to each other, they go out of the way to differentiate their disagreement on issues from personal disagreement, which requires that whenever they challenge anything, they say, of course, I have the greatest respect for.
Oh, yes.
And there's something nice about the idea of that differentiation, because there's no reason to hate another person for coming to a different conclusion. But as you watch what's going on right now, this is what I want to ask you, how you feel about it. I feel that the business model of the Democrats requires that they do what's wrong for the state, and that they are firmly committed because of the management structure, because the leadership decides what's going to happen. And the higher you are up in leadership, it seems to me, the more dangerous you are as a political figure, the more you have compromised the best interest of the state in favor of the best interest for you and your party. And the best interest of the Democrats is to keep the money coming in, even at a time where last year everybody did. Didn't Governor Malloy agree last year that they'd gone too far with taxation and they had to find a way to curb their lust for more money so the state could... Didn't he say things like that?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Governor Malloy last year was firmly against any more tax increases, particularly the income tax. And Governor Ned Lamont, to his credit, has also rejected calls for raising the income tax, especially on the top 1%. You know, his
but why is that to his credit if he wants to raise $1 billion of sales taxes and do $1 billion worth of tolls? Isn't that just staying away from the words that he knows poll negatively with voters in order to in a more obtuse way achieve the same result?
Oh yeah, no, he's proposing a massive tax increase. Don't get me wrong. It's just there's a scale of damage as to what taxes are the most damaging, and the income tax is one of the most damaging taxes. The sales tax, you know, the increases and everything like that. Don't get me wrong, those are going to do some damage, especially some of the high-priced things when you start talking about adding sales tax onto you know, home improvements and additions and things like that. You raise significant amounts of, you know, that's going to tack on a lot of money to somebody's bill, and that could definitely hurt, you know, home building and construction improvements and things like that. That was me giving him a little credit.
And, yeah, you were doing a little of the comedy thing, which is fine, but this strikes me as a really dangerous moment for the state.
Oh, it is, and I can't even say it's a make or break moment because nobody's trying to make it. You know, everybody just seems like they're hell bent on breaking it. And one thing that Governor Lamont really has to watch out for is that there is a significant portion of his own party that wants to raise the income taxes and wants to do, you know, higher taxes on, you know, financial firms and things like that. And while he is the governor, the legislature really runs the show. And so they have a large progressive caucus now in the House, and they have a lot of power to throw around. And they want things that even the governor doesn't want, but he might not be left with much of a choice when it comes to budget time.
But so, I feel that Governor Lamont has already blown his governorship, that his opportunity existed to come into power as the savior, to present himself as somebody committed to the best interests of the state rather than trying to figure out how to cobble together coalitions on his side of the aisle, that he should have made a clear statement about what was needed and what he was going to do to fix the state. An honest one, not one that skews so heavily towards the Democrats' lust for endless amounts of money to cover up the damage they've already done to the state. And he could have taken his appeal around the Democratic Party directly to the people, gotten popular support, and forced Democrats to fall into line behind him.
Yeah, Governor Lamont's honeymoon period ended probably about 29 days after he was sworn in. I think a big chunk of it revolved around his, you know, completely changing his campaign promise about tax tolling only trucks, and you know, expanding that to everybody. I mean, that was the first, you know, first kind of nail in the coffin there. Then he put out bills to consolidate school districts, and that got everybody riled up. And what we're really seeing here is that the government machinery was already working. The train had left the station, and Governor Lamont, you know, he got the job and got put into the conductor's seat, you know, but that train's already moving. And he's pretty much along for the ride. He's not doing himself a lot of favors in some of the things that he's put out and some of the things that he's done. But this is the wheels of government are turning, and he is, you know, because of the election as well. You know, because of the election, there's such a large Democratic majority in the House and Senate that can pretty much do whatever they want. They're going to, and he's getting taken along for the ride. He might get, you know, crushed under some of it, and we'll see how that turns out. But he.
So are you saying you disagree with my assessment that had he gone directly to the people, that there's really no way to go around his own party because they're so dominant now?
Oh, no, he could have gone to the people. Instead, he just kind of embraced his role as, you know, conductor of the runaway train. And, you know, he tries to give it a nice face, you know, a more, you know, comforting face as opposed to Governor Malloy. But honestly, I think what we're seeing is not only a continuation of Malloy's policies, but a worsening of Malloy's policies.
Because of his need to accommodate this new left-wing side. But also I see him becoming more of an equivocator because he's got moderates, including himself. He doesn't like what the left wants. And he also feels a need to pander to the extreme left so he doesn't face some kind of rebellion. And frankly, I don't think he's a skilled enough politician, not actually having any experience of doing this kind of manipulation and deception. So why would we expect it to work? I feel like it's not working, and that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, this is his first round in politics. So I assume there's definitely a learning curve. But at this point, I think he's facing not only a disaster of his own making, but one that his own party is, you know, amplifying. He came out with plenty of tax increases. You know, believe me. I mean, one of our policy people pegged it at $2.4 billion per year when you factor in tolls. But then on top of that, you have all sorts of other proposals for taxes, electricity taxes, home heating fuel taxes, cat taxes, you know, everything. And so when you start piling all that on and you start talking about increasing the minimum wage and a paid FMLA, you know, bill and some of these other, you know, more legal things that are coming down the road that are being, you know, passed out of committees left and right, you could be looking at some real, you know, damage to the state long term.
We're talking to Mark Fitch from the Yankee Institute on After 6 WTIC. But what you're saying is somewhat normal, what you're describing, that it's the beginning of a cycle, and at the beginning of the cycle with a newly elected, newly empowered majority, that they're going to throw everything on the table, and that's going to be winnowed down. So is it unfair to some degree what you're saying about all the stuff that Democrats are putting on the table that are tax increases? But that's all they do. It's like you go to the doctor and you have something wrong with you. He's either going to offer surgery or drugs. That's what they are purveyors of. And you go to Democrats for government, they are purveyors of tax increases.
Yeah, and they are, you know, kind of throwing everything on the table. But what I think, when you look at, there's such a majority in the House and Senate, and then they have the governorship. There's nothing stopping them. And frankly, I mean, I don't think we've seen the public outcry that perhaps we should. And because this is all going to fall down onto the consumer, it's going to fall down onto the Connecticut resident. It is going, these provisions, these bills, these taxes.
Well, wait a sec. Maybe that's why there's so many proposals.
They are going to raise the cost of living in this state when we're already looking at a very high cost of living here in Connecticut. And I think it's going to exasperate the out-migration crisis that we experienced over the last two tax increases.
And why would Democrats do that if they're looking, because the governor is out there saying, oh, the tolls are going to be wonderful. He's trying to shift the conversation. The reason we don't have growth isn't because of overtaxation, as Governor Malloy and everybody else believed just a few months ago. He's saying it's because of this darned infrastructure that we haven't spent the money on that we always had. But he doesn't talk about the transferring of funds away from transportation. He doesn't talk about the fact that transportation is fully funded, that the state already has gasoline taxes and the equivalent of tolls with the other thing there. I always forget the name of the gross receipts tax.
Oh, yeah, the petroleum gross receipts
tax.
That's
the equivalent. The gross receipts tax is the equivalent of what the state of Massachusetts, which is the biggest toll collector in New England, collects in tolls each year. So Connecticut already has its toll revenue coming in by way of the petroleum gross receipts tax. The idea that there's some shortfall for transportation is ludicrous.
The shortfall for transportation is a manufactured crisis. It's part of Governor Lamont's budget in that he's withholding vehicle sales tax revenue from the special transportation fund and bankrupting it by 2022, and somehow magically hoping that he is going to have 82 or 53 or 100 tolling gantries created across the state by that time so he can make up the difference. I mean, that is a giant gamble. And
All right, so let's get into some specifics, if that's good enough for you, just so everybody's caught up. What happened yesterday? The Transportation Committee had its first votes on toll proposals. Three specific ones were offered for consideration and approved. And what does that mean in terms of the overall process and the progress of these things?
Yeah, so basically the Transportation Committee voted to pass three tolling bills, all down party lines, Democrats for it, Republicans against it. And so now those bills will go to either the House or the Senate, depending on where they originated, for debate, for amendment, and then they can vote on it and send it over to the other House. And it's kind of this long to-do back and forth, which kind of extends the amount of time that people have to raise their voices because, you know, these aren't going to just, I don't think these are going to pass quickly. It's going to probably be an end-of-the-year thing. But it also depends on which...
End of the fiscal... end of the calendar year? Is that what you're saying?
No. End of the legislative session, so June.
Oh, okay. So we're gonna have... what month is this? We're in March. So we just have 3 months to fight this out, but that's a lot of time. And it seems to me a lot of damage is going to be done to the Democrats, even if they pass this, just with the discussion that we're having here in the state about tolls over that period of time.
Well, yeah, and you know, I'm sure there are a few Democrats that are not thrilled about this. A couple of them even spoke up during the Transportation Committee hearing. Representative Travis Sims from down in Norwalk said, he goes, I don't like this. I'm voting for it so that we can have the debate. And that's kind of
like...
Well,
but wait a second. Wasn't he saying, I'll do this as long as you give me extra money for the poor people in my district?
Well, no, he said he was concerned about the poor people in his district because they're going to have to pay tolls. And, you know, that's one thing that we've found is that, you know, the more you're struggling in the state, the less happy you are about the idea of paying tolls so you can get to work.
But if you then, I took from what he was saying that he wanted givebacks to Norwalk. Is that where he's from?
Yeah, he's from Norwalk.
That he wanted givebacks in order to compensate poor people for the insidious burden that tolls would represent for them. Did I misinterpret?
I didn't catch that part of it. I caught what he was saying about, you know, his people in his district struggling. But hey, I mean, that's how you wheel and deal up at the legislature, right?
Yeah.
Now, if we're going to have to pay tolls, and we're going to, you know, you're going to have to give us something else. These three bills passed out. One of the more interesting of the bills is Senate Bill 423, and one thing that really stuck out to me, they listed off in the bill which projects they're going to use the toll revenue for. And a good amount of those projects have nothing to do with highways or bridges.
Well, what do you mean? That's the whole thing, right? The governor points to the Mixmaster. He points to infrastructure projects on the roads. He hasn't been riding the rail saying, this train looks shabby, let's buy a new one and put tolls in to pay for it so the people driving to work can pay for the commuters going to New York City.
Oh, but that's what they want to do. So the projects listed off, you're talking about improvements to the New Haven line, improvements to the Hartford line, which runs from New Haven to Springfield, that was just built.
Wait, the new line?
The new one, yeah.
The new line with the newly refurbished cars borrowed from Massachusetts?
Yeah, well, they want to use some of the toll money to buy new cars so that we're not having to rent them from Massachusetts.
New cars. So you're driving in your old car. You haven't bought a new one because you don't want to pay the property taxes on a fancy new car. So you drive around an old shabby one, and now you're going to pay tolls, maybe $1,000 a year in tolls, so that the state can buy new trains so that rail commuters can be comfy.
Yeah, and this is the real crux of the issue, and what is kind of almost offensive. You know, Connecticut drivers already heavily subsidize public transportation by paying the gas tax, the petroleum gross receipts tax, and all the DMV fees and everything else that you pay on your car. You know, we subsidize heavily the train and bus users, and now they want to toll those same people, who the drivers, so that they can subsidize more the public transportation. You know, build more trains and, you know, subsidize the trains a little bit more. And so essentially, you're taxing one group of people to benefit another. And the drivers hardly even use those modes of transportation. They're, you know, if you're driving to and from work, you're obviously not taking the train. Why is your toll money being spent to take care of the train?
And they did say it was a user fee.
Oh, it's...
They went out of their way for some reason. I don't know why it's better as a user fee. It seems to me that it's worse for the Democrats. If it's a user fee being paid for the use of the roads, then it should go for the maintenance of the roads and for construction of new ones, should it not?
Absolutely. And if they want to really talk about user fees, then what about the user fees for the people riding the trains and the buses? Since they're getting a discount, because of the taxes that drivers pay, well, why don't we...
In other words, there's a bigger shortfall from the taxation of those who use or the fares paid by those who use the trains. There's a big shortfall. There's no way, as a matter of fact, to charge enough to riders to come close to paying for the overhead of trains. These trains are there because they're viewed as a public good, and yet there's plenty of money being extracted from the pockets of taxpayers in the state for driving already.
Yeah, and so, I mean, just a quick for instance, just because I know it off the top of my head, CT Fast Track, the bus from New Britain to Hartford. You know, drivers who get, you know, people who buy gas, they're paying $20 million a year to subsidize that bus line.
How much?
$20 million.
Okay.
And
that sounds like a good investment because those buses are filled, right?
You know, I spent 12 hours riding one of those buses, and I can tell you they're not full. That's already, you know, so the people riding that bus are not paying a true user fee because part of it's being paid for by drivers. And so when they start talking about tolls being user fees, it's absolutely ridiculous because they're taking the toll money and they're spending it on other things. And honestly, like a federal court yesterday ruled that tolls are in fact taxes and not user fees.
Oh, in Rhode Island.
Yes, in Rhode Island with the trucker lawsuit. The federal government tossed it out saying, well, states can tax people the way they want, and there you go. Tolls are a tax. So I think we can dismiss the user fee language at this point.
All right, Mark, we've got to wrap up. It's Mark Fitch from Yankee Institute. I just want to encourage people to go and read. If you want more information, go to YankeeInstitute.org and read the stories that Mark and others there write that really lay out very clearly what these policy discussions are, what, you know, what the facts are. So, for example, you've got something up that describes all of these costs that we've been going through.
Oh yeah, we always have something new going up and talking, and we have a pretty good breadth of, you know, different subjects there as well. So,
all right, Mark Fitch, thanks for joining us on After Six. We will see you again next week.
Thank you, Todd.
That's it for After Six today. Stay tuned. News is next, then the amazing Clark Howard on WTIC News Talk 1080.